move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolph fans, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, I can be a little bit hyperbolic, but I am going to do it again today because I think this might be the best episode or the best 1-2 punch of episodes we've done, maybe ever. Kyle Krabs, Locked On Dolphins, joins me. Part one is taking a look at the Dolphins' offseason approach, utilizing the comp formula, adding multiple pieces, getting deeper, void years, draft flexibility, our favorite move on offense and defense. In what ways are the Dolphins better? In what ways are there questions? And how do we solve those questions? Busy, busy episode today of the Drive Time Podcast from the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is the Drive Time Podcast. Let's go ahead and get to my guest today, the great Kyle Krabs. And joining me for his annual appearance, although we have multiple annual appearances with Kyle Krabs, is Kyle Krabs here for the Draft Extravaganza two-part preview series. We first take a look at the Dolphins offseason so far. Next episode tomorrow, we'll be taking a look at the draft, and we'll kind of have some fun games going back and forth, doing some fun things with mocks and seeing who might go where and who could be your pick for your Miami Dolphins at 21-55. But in the meantime, at Grinding the Tape on Twitter, Locked On Dolphins Podcast, the knower of all things Dolphins draft. Kyle, hey, buddy.
I don't know about all things Dolphins draft, but hey, Travis, it's great as always to be chit-chatting with you and talking some Dolphins football. And another one of these landmark events of the offseason has come, and there's organized team activities, and you can start to feel it a little bit in the air. It feels good.
Throws on air with bucket hats get me excited this time of year. Like, I love golf. I love baseball. The Heat, it's not looking so good for the Heat right now. They might be out by the time this podcast comes out. But yeah, man, like, nothing gets the juices going like football. And draft season always tends to really ratchet that excitement up for the new season, especially now that we have a first-round draft pick. But before we get into all that, I want to talk about the offseason so far, because it has been much debated. It has been much bandied about. You and I have done a lot of content on this team, what they've done so far. We've shared a lot of text talking about how excited we are for what this team has done so far. Let's go ahead and just unveil some of that here step by step. And I want to first start off with how you viewed the approach the Dolphins took this offseason. I think we both are in lockstep. The idea of being frugal in certain areas, maybe stretching the budget a little bit at the key spots, like a Kendall Fuller, for instance, going and getting a Jordan Brooks, but really frugal in the way they kind of attacked what the compensatory formula is, adding multiple pieces to kind of make up for the loss of some key guys on the offensive line, defensive line. Talk me through the idea of that, getting deeper, utilizing the potential future comp formula, and just how you come down on how the offseason has played out so far for your Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, so I think you look at where the Dolphins were at with resources. It is a limited and finite resource league. And, you know, coming into this year, the narrative was kind of this team spent 2 years with minimal draft capital for various reasons, for decisions that they had made, came in with a 1-2 this year. So you felt like the tide was starting to turn there, but you knew a lot of these second contracts were coming up and you were going to have to make some strategic decisions. And sure enough, we saw the team do exactly that. And I think if you omit the first 8 hours of the legal tampering period that first Monday, like, it's been a pretty enjoyable stretch to see how they chose to approach getting deeper as a roster, but doing it in a way that does position this team to potentially have two additional third round picks with the departure of Robert Hunt and Christian Wilkins. And I don't think there's any secret based on the team going after players that were below the minimum threshold to qualify for compensatory picks, or you got a little deeper into that week, that first week, and there was a corresponding move. As soon as a player left and signed somewhere else or agreed to terms somewhere else, it was announced that the Dolphins were agreeing to terms with somebody, and it was playing the ping pong of you have to play a math game with the net number of players that you lose versus the net number of players that you sign. in order to maximize that. And Miami has not, I think, received any compensatory pick since 2017, I think was the last time that they got anything for anybody that left in free agency. So this is a little bit of a different animal than what a lot of Dolphins fans were accustomed to, but I think they played it as well as you possibly could. And oh, by the way, the compensatory pick window ends the Monday after the NFL draft. So all of that tracking of free agent signings, that door's about to close. And then whatever they do from there will be a matter of what cap space they have to accommodate contracts. And then you'll get into June 1st when they have additional cap space that opens up and they'll be able to make additional strategic decisions for what this roster is going to look like.
And that was kind of something I look at the offseason as a whole. You keep talking about the exciting moves and all the different pieces they've added. And I just keep thinking there's a couple of spots where it's like, I could see one more move in that spot that will really solidify that group and make this roster, you know, right back where we were a year ago. And everyone was so gung ho about the Dolphins roster and how excited they were for a potential deep run to the postseason. Didn't happen that way, but I think that the thought of what this team's supposed to look like offensively and defensively was there, and it'll be there again this year. But yeah, you talked about it, man. Like once that comp window, the comp formula window closes, like Chris Greer has made notable moves, not just in the summer or in training camp or at cutdown day. We've had guys come in at cutdown day and be big time contributors to this football team. So they're not done yet. There's always going to be work done on the roster, and Chris Greer is one of the best at making sure he turns over every single stone to get that roster put together the way we hope it can be, like we were last year, as one of these, you know, very fond over NFL rosters. But tell me about the defensive line before we get into the idea here of how this team has created draft flexibility and our favorite move on offense and defense this offseason. But you talked about the threshold of the, you know, signing guys under the comp formula. A lot of those guys were on that defensive line, right? And trying to, I guess, to use a Billy Beanism from Moneyball, to recreate Christian Wilkins in the aggregate, you know, Benito Jones is more of a nose tackle. T.R. Tart kind of a nose tackle as well. That's kind of a Raekwon Davis, I think, replacement. But then Neville Gallimore, Jonathan Harris, Deshaun Hand comes back. Just tell me about how you viewed that group and kind of the thinking behind replacing, you know, 85% workload and really good pass rusher, really good run defender, and just kind of a overall dominant player in Christian Wilkins. How do you think Miami looks at that and kind of what's next if there is another move coming for the Dolphins there?
Yeah, I would like to explicitly state, I think the two things the Dolphins have not done at this stage of the offseason is replace Robert Hunt and replace Christian Wilkins.
Yeah.
And you probably were not going to replace Christian with the snap volume regardless, and being one of what, the five highest paid defenders in football now is where he currently sits. So a player who had this kind of season that he has and is as complete of a player as he is, it's an unenviable task. But I look at Baltimore last year with Anthony Weaver coming from Baltimore and kind of giving you some context clues in his introductory press conference that they're going to do some similar things to what Baltimore did. And the highest snap-taking player on the defensive line was Justin Matabuik, who played 65% of the snaps. Has Christian ever taken less than 80% of the snaps in a season?
It depends who you ask.
Right. Michael Pierce, 55%. Travis Jones, 39%. Broderick Washington, 35%. Brent Urban, 24%. You go down the list, and there is much more of a rotational approach. So if you were to put Zach Sealer in the Matabuik category as a player, Baltimore last season with Anthony Weaver on the staff was much more rotational with the rest of the guys. You would still like to feel like you get another high ceiling player, where I think you look at Jonathan Harris is a young guy with some heavy hands. What's the passing down ceiling there? Benito Jones, Dolphins fans are very familiar with because he was here. Neville Gallimore maybe has a little bit more of the pass rush ceiling with what he was at Oklahoma, but he's kind of been playing a little too much in the A-gap. Is there more opportunities for there to unlock? So like there's some nice strategic dice rolls that guys have untapped potential for you to wean into. But you would probably like to feel a little bit better about having another staple of the rotation instead of all of these guys who are unproven in some capacity or just young players where you don't ultimately know where they're going to fall in the spectrum.
Yeah, that's why, like, I love, we'll talk about draft flexibility here in a moment. I just love where they are currently because, you know, you do get more money coming back to you this summer that you talked about the comp formula not accounting for, or the signings after the draft not accounting towards the comp formula. Like, I look at a player, like, who knows what it might be? It could be through the draft. It could be, hey, we're going to revisit, you know, Odell Beckham at receiver. We could look at a guy like Calais Campbell, for instance, who's out there still in the open market. Like, there are so many options for this team to continue to get better, and I can't wait to see what happens from draft weekend and beyond. And speaking of that, I think the move that really kind of shocked Dolphins fans the most, or at least me, I was surprised to see it, was the Kendall Fuller move. And that was one that kind of was a departure from what you just talked about with the idea of being frugal in nature and picking your spots and kind of waiting for, okay, there goes Van Ginkle. Now we can go ahead and sign Shaq Barrett because there's the offset and the comp formula, all that stuff. Like, Kendall Fuller just kind of seemed to be the one that was different from that group with what he got and what he is as a player and at the position where we have, you know, a lot of depth there all of a sudden. But the way the Dolphins did that was adding void years to his contract. And I know you're very into the contract and the negotiation side stuff. Yeah, right. Exactly. So help us out here, because I love the way you describe it. I think that you do a good job of doing this on Twitter and your podcast as well. Just go ahead and walk us through void years and how that was a big reason why the Dolphins were able to get a Kendall Fuller on their football team for 2024.
Yeah, and Miami has started to tap into this a lot more. I think coming into free agency, they had three contracts that had any semblance of void years on it. And it was Austin Jackson, who they had signed like an in-season extension to, Jalen Ramsey, who they brought in, and he had several years left, and they changed what was guaranteed money there and did some stuff there. And then I think Jason Sanders was the only other contract coming into free agency that had any semblance of void years. And this has been a new trend in the last three or four seasons that you've seen some teams get really, really aggressive with. And some teams are like really, really far along in comparison to where Miami is in this regard, but they're placeholder years for signing bonuses. So if you were to sign a player to a one-year deal and give him, theoretically, just to use round numbers, a $6 million signing bonus, instead of having all of the accounting for the $6 million into that singular year where the player is under contract, you can put placeholder years behind it and prorate whatever percentage. If it was two void years on a one-year deal, that $6 million signing bonus, you only have to account for two of the $6 million this year. And then the following year would be $2 million. And the year after that would be the other $2 million to get to the full amount of money that you wrote the check for. And the first year a player is off the team, all of the prorated money, no matter how many years are behind it that were placeholder years, it accelerates and is used as dead cap. But if you sign a player to a contract extension and keep them on the roster, then it would serve just like any other prorated signing bonus portion of a contract that's given out. So you have flexibility for when to take your lumps and take your losses and have that salary cap space that accelerates. And it just gives you more flexibility where you can choose to commit several new years to a player and not have to absorb effectively what would be like theoretically what that player's salary would be in dead money that you prorated out. So you don't want to do too much of this. You don't want to get too heavy handed. And there's some teams across the league that are very, very, very in the weeds on this. Like, almost you look at it and you think there's the point of no return. At some point, the bottom's going to drop out here. I don't think Miami's there yet because it's still so selective in the dollar amounts for so many of the players that they did this to, whether it was free agent signings or contract restructures. They're not there yet. The dollar amounts are relatively small and easily digestible, even if the player leaves and you have to take the dead money. Oh, by the way, if you choose to cut a player, you could accelerate and get out of all that dead money and just take the dead money whenever you choose to move on from a player that, even if they have several years left on their contract. Miami at this stage, you'd be doing yourself as a team that's in a winning window. This is the biggest thing about it. There's incurred risk with it. You'd be doing yourself such a disservice to just not use it at all because everybody else is using it. So if you choose to not use a tool that is new that everybody else is using, you're putting yourself at a competitive disadvantage for how good of a roster you're able to assemble. Now, there's teams that are irresponsible with it, and I don't think what the Dolphins did this offseason with that is the case. And because of that, I think it's a net positive for how they have been able to work around some of the restrictions that were anticipated to be here for how they were going to put together as good of a team as they possibly could.
And to that point, like your coworker Luke Braun, who does a great job with Locked On Vikings, put one of my favorite graphics of all time into the ether, where he essentially illustrated how $2 million in 2024 is not the same as $2 million in 2025. Because why? Because the salary cap increases. And so you're effectively mortgaging a smaller interest rate in the future when you use the void years. Look at this, too. Not
and
math
there, and
guys.
There is no interest on prorated. So there's no interest at all anyway. And the value of the dollar next year will be higher than the value of the dollar now. So pay the bill from this year's dollar next year when the value of the dollar is higher.
I mean, it makes sense to me. I love that I just tried to make a joke about our inability to do numbers and math and call us not math guys. Apparently not words guys either, who talk on podcasts for a living every single day. Let's go ahead and take our first break right there. Plenty more to come here with my good friend and my guest. I almost combined those two together. Kyle Krabs at Grind the Tape on Twitter, Locked On Dolphins Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Wingfield, Drive Time Podcast, brought to you by AutoNation. Segment number two, episode number one. We have six segments to go here with Kyle Krabs. Kind of reminds me of the great Chris Everett, Jim Everett with Jim Rome back in the day. I'm going to get five more segments out of you here, Kyle. You flip a table
just
over on me.
Just don't call me Chris, right?
I did call you Chris off the top. Bet you I'd do it again, Chris. I wanted to jump into the idea of how this offseason set Miami up to be ultimately flexible in the draft. And that includes the compensatory formula, like you talked about. We should be getting, it could be two third round picks next year. I believe there could be a sixth round pick in there as well, if it all plays out the way we think it could here. That gives you flexibility for potential trades up and trades down, because hey, if there's a player at 16 or 17 you want to go get, maybe that future third could be the cost it takes to go get that. And you have your own inherent third already to trade with. You can't trade future comp picks yet, but you can trade your own, knowing you have your own coming back in the comp formula. But also, Kyle, not just the ability to be flexible on the draft board, but with how you draft, because of the fact that this offensive line has so many guys that can play inside and out. Cornerbacks, your two starters are just as good inside as they are on the outside. At safety, post and box safeties. Like, there is so much damn flexibility on this roster. And I asked Chris Greer about this, and he said, yeah, versatility is always an emphasis for us. But I'm just curious how, because you do a good job of watching the other 31 teams and kind of how they go into these drafts. I feel like there's so many teams that enter a draft and it's like, we don't have a left tackle to play a football game tomorrow. We have to get one of those, and it has to be early because we have to count on that guy. But Miami's not like that. They could pretty much take any damn position they want, and it's because of where the roster is with all the flexibility, and you have so many key guys that could potentially or conceivably move if they have to. A la when, was it the Yankees signed Alex Rodriguez? Move him to third base because we can play him there. Like, that's kind of what it reminds me of, not on the Yankees level, but just in terms of the flexibility. That's got to be super valuable for a GM and a coaching staff, right?
Yeah, it gives you a lot of peace of mind to know that you can, especially when you're picking a little bit further down in the 20s. It's a little different story if you were picking top eight. I look at the Chargers, right, and their wide receiver right room right now is Quentin Johnston, Josh Palmer, Darius Davis, and Simi Fehoko. That's the entire wide receiver room for the Chargers, right? And they pick five. You look at offensive tackle for the Titans, and it's Nicholas Petit-Frere, Jalen Duncan, Dylan Raiduns, Leroy Watson, and John Njoku, right? Like, there's a need, a definitive need there. So for Miami to come into a draft where they're picking lower down, where there's more unpredictability about who's going to be off the board, and no, let's let it come to us, and let's let the value be dictated on who slides, who's there at 21. If there's a player we have way up our board and he starts to get to like 16, 17, maybe you can have that conversation like you alluded to, knowing, hey, we're scheduled right now to get two extra day two draft picks for 2025. Is there wiggle room there? And to be able to be assertive, to go up and strike for a guy that maybe is sneaking into getting into your lap. You just drafting for need is one of the first class tickets in my mind to set yourself up for failure with your draft picks, because you're putting yourself in a corner and you're pigeonholing yourself for how you have to approach the board. And you know, that's one of the costs of having sustained winning success, and Miami having several seasons of that now, is you're routinely picking in the 20s, right? And that means you have to position yourself. You can't say, let's go into this draft and we're going to draft a starting defensive end or a starting corner, because you just don't know that deep into the class, into the round, what it's going to look like.
And yeah, I mean, I just think that the Dolphins' ability to kind of even be flexible in how they call a game on a certain week. Like, I saw a great thread by Jordan Rodrigue, the great writer for The Athletic, who covers the Rams and is very tight with Sean McVay and Lesney. And she showed this video, or there was a video that came out about how they kind of went over the idea of getting Kobe Turner. They were like really locked in on drafting him last year. And she talked about the kind of being malleable between the coaching staff and the front office for like, hey, our first year, we wanted to run 12 personnel, but we drafted this guy Cooper Kupp. And if I run 12 personnel, he has to come off the field. So now I'm going to be adaptable and run 11 personnel and adapt the way I do my offense to fit the personnel I have. And I think Miami's in a position where they can kind of do that because McDaniel and Frank Smith and Anthony Weaver now on defense are so good at being flexible in how they craft plans for every single opponent they'll face on every single week. And speaking of the offense and the defense there, let's go ahead and talk about these moves a little bit. We've kind of told you how it came to be, how the Dolphins have put themselves in the position they are right now ahead of the draft. But what was your favorite move, man? I want to know your favorite player that the Dolphins added on offense and defense, how they fit in, where you think they can make their biggest impact. Let's go ahead and start on offense. Your favorite Dolphins offensive acquisition in 2024.
Man, I think that probably is Aaron Brewer, just for the scheme fit that he provides. And, you know, Miami kind of made some waves when they first signed Connor Williams, who was a guard, and it was kind of rumored they'd be considering playing him at center. And everybody's like, really? Like, he's a tackle in college, and then he played guard, and he was a good guard. And he goes to center, and it's this home run fit for the athleticism that he brings. And Brewer last year in Tennessee was the first year he'd played a full season at center since, I think he said, what, his junior year of high school or something like that? It'd been forever. It'd been like seven seasons, and he played all over the place, going all the way back through college and his early years in Tennessee. And I think you see so many parallels for the ways in which he wins and what he is as a player to Connor Williams, that I think that's a nice extension of what that position has been for them when Connor's been there the past two seasons. And to find a player like that in the midst of Connor and the super unfortunate injury that he had that ended his season prematurely, and the fact that he was not under contract with the team beyond 2024, to know that that identifying quality of what your offense is when it's at its best can still exist, I think is a really nice win for the Dolphins offensive line.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think that, you know, every time McDaniel or Shanahan has gone somewhere, they found a center who's played really well for them. And for Shanahan, it was like Alex Mack, wherever I go, you go, buddy. But with Connor Williams, right. And now hopefully Aaron Brewer can kind of follow that same line of thinking, because it's a very important position in this offense. I'm gonna take Jonnu Smith just because of where we are right now on the roster. I think that the ability to have a third separator, a guy that can also win in contested form and play more inside as well and kind of get wins in that position. We saw so many games down the stretch last year where, you know, Tyreek or Waddle got all the attention and we had to have a win inside, and defenses got more of those wins than we did as the offense struggled to move the ball in some of those games down the stretch. So I'm going Jonnu Smith for what he does in that sense, the screen game and enough of a blocker to kind of keep you flexible and allow those personnel groupings to look kind of similar, but also different at the same time. That's my pick on offense. Those are my top two, though. I love both those additions to this Dolphins offense so far. We'll see what happens going forward in the draft and then the post-draft free agency period the Dolphins will, I'm sure every team will be a part of as well. So defensively, though, this one, I don't know, man. I'm gonna let you take the first pick. There's two guys I'm kind of circling here, so I'll go ahead and take whoever you don't if it's one of the two. But favorite move on defense for the Dolphins this offseason?
I think there's three, to be honest with you. I really like the Jordan Brooks signing at linebacker. Just a little bit of a different player than what Miami's had in quite some time at that position, where first round athletic profile, first round build frame is a big dude. But not only is he a big dude, he plays in space really well. And I know some of the coverage metrics that exist on the internet will tell you a story about Jordan Brooks. But when you see the degree of difficulty of the assignments that has been given in Seattle, and the amount of space and grass that he's capable of covering, and how he can get vertical on three down the field and match against really good wide receivers in the NFL, or he can take those crossing routes and cut them from underneath after getting out of his run reads against tight ends or wide receivers, which the middle of the field coverage intermediate felt like it's been a little bit of a sore spot for Miami for quite some time. And I think between what they're doing to overhaul the safety room and then a player underneath, especially in today's game, you're playing so much high safety stuff with multiple players back in an effort to limit explosive plays, that weight gets transferred and deferred to the second level of your defense because there's more space behind you. So you have to play a little deeper. You have to trigger a little faster. You have to be a little rangier. And Jordan Brooks does that. And that move for Miami, I was super bummed when they couldn't work things out with Jerome Baker, because I think Jerome was a really underrated player for the things that he did, again, because he had a very large menu of responsibilities that he had. I think Jordan Brooks was kind of the same way, but with different responsibilities that he was given that I think maybe skew the perception of who he is as a player, that I think Miami fans are going to see Jordan Brooks playing in this defense, and they're going to be very quickly be able to identify that he has some strengths and qualities that Miami is going to be a lot better off for having.
It's cool to see the way this linebacker room kind of got remade the last couple of years, because David Long last year I thought was an absolute home run signing. Maybe a bit of a slow start for him, but man, once he got kind of comfortable in the defense and got going, that play speed shows up, and I think Jordan Brooks is even faster. Like, I think he's faster. I think the click and close, the change of direction ability, like, gosh, man, he's fun to watch.
Patrol, he's bigger and longer too.
He's a first round pick, like you said. Like, there's a reason he was that, because he checks all those boxes. And David Long kind of plays. David Long plays with that, like, I'm a late round pick mentality and chip on his shoulder. But so does Jordan Brooks, man. And I think that playing next to Bobby Wagner for so many years kind of rubbed off on him a little bit there, because he really plays this a certain tenacity and like kind of like some ish to him, if you will, to keep it family friendly here. My pick is Kendall Fuller. I mean, I talked about it when he got signed. I talked about this is one of the best cornerbacks in the league for my money in terms of inside outside flexibility. Zone, man, like he can pretty much do whatever you need him to do. He can shadow, he can play off, he can really help you just be smarter in the defensive backfield. I think he and Ramsey together is just going to make any of the young guys they have, a Kader Kohu, for instance, play better, play smarter, play faster. I just really like how flexible they are on that back end now. And I gotta ask you, because I think I know who it is, but give me the third name you were thinking of there, Kyle.
Shaq Barrett.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, he can still go, man. He can still go.
He's a very productive pressure player. It's that whole sacks versus pressure perception for a guy who had, 16, 18 sacks a few years back, and that number's declined a little bit, so there's a little bit of an assumption about who he is, but when you watch the presence and disruption around the quarterback as a pass rusher, he's still got it, and he's always been somebody who has had to have a high pass rush IQ because he wasn't a super toolsy guy coming out of Colorado State. His football intelligence and instincts have always been one of his calling cards, and that helps players age a little bit more gracefully when you have to be developed in that regard. So you can talk about how Shaq Barrett has been in the league for a decade, but I think he's a player that is uniquely qualified to still be an impactful player, because it was never about just his first step, or it was never just about his length. It was about all of it and him understanding how his body works to win as a player. And he's done it at a really high level.
I mean, yeah, there's a reason he's that productive, like you talk about there. And I just think that also getting to know the guy for just 10 minutes, he's going to have a really positive net impact on this locker room too. He's such a gentle soul and a guy that kind of makes people gravitate towards him. One of those kind of unique personalities. So really good stuff there, Kyle. We have one more segment here on episode one. We are in segment 3 out of 6 here coming up. Going to get 5 segments out of you here on this episode today, Jim Everett. We'll go ahead and talk about how the Dolphins are better in the next segment, and also what are some of the questions around the roster heading into the draft, and how do we solve those? That's next here, Draft Time Podcast. My guest today, Kyle Krabs, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by Auto Nation. Final segment here on the first episode with my good buddy here, Kyle Krabs, talking about ways the Dolphins improved their football team in 2024. Fun year last year, Kyle, disappointing end, but 11 wins is 11 wins. I'll take that every single year. We want more, though. We want 12, 13 wins. We want playoff wins. Dolphins want the same thing. How do they do that, and how did they accomplish getting themselves better this offseason to go ahead and do that?
Yeah, I think you alluded to Jonnu Smith, and I think that's the one area offensively that there has definitively been a new layer added between Jonnu Smith and Jody Fortson as a bit of a flyer for a gifted pass catcher who is under the radar and hasn't played a lot of snaps because he's dealt with some injuries. To have him in the competition here for this tight end room, I think that tight end infusion is already putting that spot, which we know for a lot of offenses can be an X-factor position, is a really good step in the right direction for Miami. I'll be fascinated to see if they choose to invest more in it or if they're content to simply address it by adding a different skill set to the room. So that's, I think, offensively where I think you have some better peripheral players within the offense to complement the cornerstones that you have. And then defensively, I think you went out and got a lot of different body types. I think you swapped some guys out that give you more flexibility scheme-wise to be able to match whether you're facing predominantly a 12-personnel team or a 21-personnel team or an 11-personnel team. We talked about Jordan Brooks and what he does differently. Kendall Fuller and that positional flexibility. And you mentioned the two starters. Never mind, like Cam Smith at South Carolina had a year where he was a big-time inside nickel guy, and then he had years where he was an outside guy. And Kader Coe's had experience in seasoning in both. And Nick Needham could play the nickel, and he could play safety. Like, it's all of those guys can move around and play matchups where I think that's the biggest difference defensively for Miami is there's more ambiguity on what they're going to be running.
And I know you mentioned Nick Needham. I know that he is thrilled to be a full year removed from the injury because wearing those red pennies, man, at practice. Talked to Alec Ingold about this a couple of years ago, having to go through camp in the non-contact jersey. It's just like you're itching to get back to full form. And that's what Nick Needham's heading into this offseason with this year. So looking forward to having him back in the fold at full go for the entire offseason program. For me, it's just the depth of the football team, man. Like I think you try to learn from what your ills were a season ago. And for Mike McDaniel, I mean, there's nothing he can do about this, but they've been injured, man. They've ended the year without their quarterback. And then last year without their entire pass rush arsenal and most of the offensive line for the back half of the season down the entire, you know, the rest of the way. So I think that the ability to have more players and be just deeper and be able to count on more guys that have NFL experience is a big way this team can improve, you know, late down the stretch and kind of take on some of the attrition that happens in an NFL football season. How about some questions you might have? A couple of questions around the roster right now. And go ahead and play GM for us, Kyle, and fix those questions you might have.
Well, you got this thing called the draft here coming up, which you have an opportunity to address some of those needs. So if you're really good about that, I would say you lost a cornerstone player and a quality starter that have not been replaced yet. And that's Christian Wilkins and Robert Hunt. And obviously for the dollar amounts that they got on the open market, just well-deserved for both of those guys, I think is important to emphasize. You know, they both came in as a part of that 2019 and 2020 draft class and really developed into very, 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 very good football players. But the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, and the needs of this roster necessitated that they make some difficult decisions. And that also includes long-term decisions on other player contracts like Jaylen Waddle and Jalen Phillips as players who are coming up as a part of the 2021 class that will be due for contract extension. So would you have made a decision on Christian at the expense of Jaylen Waddle? You know, and that, like all of those things, when you look at the long term as compared to just the immediate 2024, have to be part of that conversation. But I don't envy trying to replace either one of them with a one for one because it's probably not going to happen. But if you have a deeper roster, you have a more complementary roster, you have more ways in which you can attack opposing units, which I think is kind of the story of what they've done in tight end. We'll see what they do with the rest of the skill group. They've had some overtures with Odell Beckham Jr. as far as being an addition for their 11 personnel packages. And then the versatility defensively and a higher defensive rotation anyway. I think you can add to both of those spots still. And I look at the way that my draft board is up, and there's a lot of day two talent that I really like in both the interior defensive and interior offensive lines. You will have opportunities to add a player. And I put the Dolphins players up on my draft board along with the players in the draft class with an adjusted grade. So I can definitively see, okay, I can see where Isaiah Wynn and Aaron Brewer rank, and I could see where the next player ranks for the Dolphins, and then I could see how many players are above every one of those players, how many players are above the third player on the interior offensive line. I can see how many tackles are ranked above that that have interior positional flexibility. So you're going to be ripe with opportunities to address both of those positions and help close the gap a little bit so that the fall off you don't feel is so extreme with these elite or high-end starters that have left your roster that can then allow the things that you have done to be different. And then post June 1st is going to come around and you're going to have a little bit more spending opportunity because you'll have additional salary cap space that opens up to add in free agency for veterans that are still on the market as well.
How do you feel like teams and the Dolphins specifically, I know you can't know this for sure, but how do you think teams would balance that thinking of like, I have these things I need to get shored up for this season, but I also, it goes back to the best player available and not drafting for need. Like we talked about in the top of the show, like how do teams balance that compared to, well, yeah, that would be really nice for 2024, but I kind of like this guy at a different position for a longer term projection as a better player. Who wins out in that debate?
I think every team's probably a little different based on their team performance, the urgency that's maybe needed to have immediate contributors. I don't think Miami should necessarily feel any pressure in that regard, which is a nice place to be. I think they've been very clear that they have a long-term vision for sustained success and have talked about player development. And I do think it would behoove them to find volume snap takers with their higher draft picks this year. I think that that's one of the things that as long as you solve that issue, you can get out of a draft and get to June and say, okay, here's the June 1st free agents that are still available. Or you can explore trades, right? Like if Miami knows they're going to get extra day three or day two picks or a day two and a day three pick from a compensatory pick formula in the summertime, there's players that are traded in the summertime and when training camp happens all the time. And then there will be cut downs to 53 in September at the beginning of September. So this isn't your last investment opportunity. So I think to view it from the frame of this is maybe our biggest investment opportunity. You make the best long-term investment decisions now, knowing that you can plug and address needs at any number of stops along the way between now and the start of the season.
And that's why I think it's so valuable to have those visits with an Odell Beckham ahead of the draft. Because now he's like, okay, you come out of the draft and all of a sudden you call the agent, hey, we didn't get our receiver. Let's go ahead and revisit this contract negotiation with Odell. Maybe you did get your guy and you move on a different direction. And also, I love that you mentioned how this is not the end of the acquisition period, especially with Chris Greer. Because like you talked about using void years and being a little more aggressive with those here this past season or this offseason. Like, I feel like the trade tsunami, as it were, that kind of engulfed the league a couple of years ago where teams became more active and more open to trades. He was kind of at the forefront of that as well. So there's always going to be different ways and different avenues to improve this roster. And if there are avenues, Chris Greer will find them. So great stuff, Kyle. Let's go ahead and call it an episode one and get out of here. Come back and do it again. Does that sound good for you?
Great.
And if Locked On NFL Scouting at Grind the Tape on Twitter, Locked On Dolphins Podcast, my guest, Kyle Krabs. Kyle, thank you so much, man. Let's run it back. And we will do just that tomorrow. Part two with Kyle talking about Tua, where he can go from here. We'll talk about the offseason a little bit further, and we'll play some mock draft games and tell you what to expect come Thursday night and Friday and beyond for the Dolphins 2024 draft. You don't want to miss that. In the meantime, you all please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, follow on social, Fish Tank Podcast, Seth and Juice. Check out the YouTube channel, and last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until tomorrow, fins up. Carolina Cameron, Daddy's coming home.